Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. Today's guest is artist Jerry Smith, and by complete coincidence or accident, I've double booked, and we also
that was my mistake.
We also have Bob Parks here, who's coming in next week as well to continue with his lecture, but we didn't want to leave him out. So
come up all the way from the New Forest.
Yeah. So Bob is here with Jerry Smith, artist. Good afternoon to both of you. Anything could happen.
Hello. Yeah, well, anyway, we'll see how we get on. But we've not made a good start, to be honest.
No?
Not really. You know.
Oh, you're worried. Why?
Yeah, he wants a radio and a half. I'm only coming here for one.
You can have half of mine next week.
No. Okay.
All right. Well, you're both artists, so you should get on very well. Oh, okay. First of all, I have to rattle through a quick advert. It's quite a long advert, so if you just sort of sit patiently whilst I'll try and rattle through it very quickly. That's Saturday, the 20th of June, 2015, Bethnal Green Working Men's Club, 42 to 44 Pollard Row, London E26NB. Doors 7 p.m. for a 7:30 p.m. start, £10 advance or £15 on the door. This is an event put on by Nowhere, which is no.w.here, so sort of now here or nowhere or not there. An invitation for artists, radicants. Do you know what radicants are?
No.
Never heard of that. Friends, fugitives and time travellers to celebrate 10 years of Nowhere at a late night party on the shortest night of the year. Saturday the 20th of June, a lively and eclectic evening at the Bethnal Green Working Men's Club. Come and dance on the back of austerity, double speak and triple think. The night features a heady and eclectic mix of film, music, performance and interventions. So that's Saturday, the 20th of June, Bethnal Green Working Men's Club, 7 o'clock for a 7:30 start. Okay, that's that. Jerry Smith.
Hello.
You are at the Danielle Arnault Gallery.
At this minute, yep.
At the moment. Until when?
The 12th of July.
Right. And these are flower paintings.
And little bits and pieces that look a bit like flowers.
Which is a bit of a deviation from your normal work.
Yeah, it's, you're going to change whether you like it or not, to be quite honest, you know.
Yeah.
And then I suppose, shall I say a little bit about why I did it, or I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yes.
I was depressed for quite a long while, off work, blah, 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 but the one thing I could get out of bed for was to get a beer or watch telly, because I thought then I'd sleep. But then I noticed if I write to anybody, I doodle some flowers, you know. So then when I sort of got a little bit out of it, I thought, well, have a go at flowers, you know. And then I thought, well, I'll try it for a year, you know.
Yeah.
And then the words popped up about a year of painting flowers, so I thought, okay, I'm stuck with it now for a year and see how we go.
Right.
That was it, really.
Okay. But it's not conventional flower painting. It's very sort of Belgian, isn't it?
Belgium.
It's it's like flowers painted by, I mean, I suppose the influence on you is probably Peter Kinley.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Kinley.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose...
But then it seems like there's a bit of Luke Tymans or something in there, or not?
Not really, because he's more atmospheric. I mean, he's more Mirandi, and I kind of had a break from that from years ago, you know. I do like Luke Tymans. I love Mirandi.
Yeah.
But atmosphere's a kind of funny thing, you know, and Luke Tymans is expert at it, and I'm less interested in it at the moment.
Okay. But so, how long have you been doing the flowers?
Must be a bit more than a year, to be
right.
honest. But I think what it is the way I do them is to do with, you know, when the place I grew up in first was, it had one window and it had a brick wall like about 10 feet away. So I didn't have space in a way. So I was quite used to looking at adverts or buildings or whatever. So everything has to sort of start quite close. And normally quite flat or whatever, you know.
Right.
So every now and again, I just play with not doing that, just to show that I did learn something at art school to draw, and then I can turn the corner in and out the picture.
Right.
But otherwise, I'm happy with flat.
Right. But would you say that is there a, although they're not conventional flower paintings by any means at all,
no.
Are they? I mean, it's sort of like I suppose Hamilton Finlay, does he come into it?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Right. I mean, because it's like a little, the way he picks up images and throws words with it, and it confuses you. And but it's also like the idea of like a letter. This is what I get, I don't know, I think I get from Hamilton Finlay. It's like, or a word, right? It hasn't got a size. So, you know, if you put L-O-R-D, Lord, right, it can be tiny, it can be like, you know, huge, you know. But, and then sometimes you can treat flowers the same way, you know, why not make it microscopic or like really like huge? And because it's still, then you'll get the word flower from the image in a way. Whereas if you get too close to like conventional flower painting, then people think of natural flowers, whereas if you muck about with it a bit, you get the word flower. And I love getting words and going back to images and bouncing between words and images, really, I suppose. Mm. And so even if there's something with no words on it, you look at it like it's a word. I remember I was in Spain once and looking across a bay, and there was what I thought was this house on a hill. But because it was such a round hill and the house was right on the top, and then you just looked at it and you just said to yourself, house on the hill, like Janet and John book one reading book, you know. But then, you know, so I think things like that, then I want to draw it more because of that than what it looks like, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. Yeah, it's a thing about words. And
so pictures. You mentioned being depressed.
Yeah.
So did painting flowers get you out of the depression or...?
No, I just think it's like the residue of getting out of it. You know, I think, to be honest, I think making art's like residue. I keep saying that word, and I quite like it at the moment. But it's like you say you start out, what you're going to do? Well, hopefully have an interest in life. And, well, what do I do? You know, then art might pop up for you if you're lucky. And then in doing that, you meet interesting people. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of, if you're born in London, it's a free space, or it seems freer than going to university or whatever, then it gets interesting possibly, and then if you go abroad or whatever and discover things that, but the art bit is just like the bit you need, it kind of helps you calm down a bit and do it, and it's sort of behind the interesting bit for me, you know. Mm-hmm.
But, so would you say, is there a degree of melancholy lurking beneath the surface?
Or, well, I hope everything is beneath the surface, like anger, like a bit of sort of naughtiness, a bit of pleasure, you know. So you hope it's all there.
Yeah.
And for me anyway, really good works of art is you go back and you see it completely different. I mean, the bad stuff is you get it straight away. What's the point of going back, you know? But the good stuff, and that can be back from very old paintings, you know, it's just stuff still there.
Yeah. But do you think the paintings have something in common with conventional flower painting, like sort of, you know, Dutch 17th century
I think maybe in the future, maybe, if I do one, but right. I suppose, no, I noticed like when Mondrian was painting for watercolour of flowers, he did a really happy kind of sunflower. Yeah, Van Gogh one I noticed was very miserable in a way, but you know, and I don't know why I didn't realise how miserable it was till I did it in a church, really big, you know, and I had a big study of it, and I just couldn't even have it in the studio because it was, I painted over it, and I turned it into a painting which is in the show now, and it's got off licence written on it.
Right.
So yeah, underneath it is the miserable Van Gogh flower.
Okay, so why off-license?
Well, I had a job with a charity down in Bethnal Green, and where I work with residents, it was off Bethnal Green Road, and I was past this sign, and the lettering was just one. I mean, it's a bit grubby, the sign, but the lettering, I thought, I've never seen that before. It's like, it's kind of, I don't know, it's lovely, if you know what I mean, but you think, what's lovely about it? But then, so I took a photo, and then you try and do it, then you... I hate to say it, but you do kind of improve it, to be quite honest. You know, you kind of make it the size you want it to be. You tweak it a bit. You know, yeah. And then people will recognise it. But it is different as well. I mean, Liechtenstein, if anyone says it's just like a comics, they're just wrong, because Liechtenstein just does these little things and you've got a great Liechtenstein, you know, so...
Right.
You won't get that much, probably, if you look at a reproduction of a Liechtenstein and a comic that he's got it from. But if you see the real thing, you know, the other thing that isn't going to stand up in a museum of art, okay. You know, yeah, that's for me anyway.
Bob has also talked about depression. He sort of deals with his depression differently. He sort of turns it into performance art, I think. Is that fair, Bob?
Depression?
Yeah.
Well, I feel depressed now.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm making it up. I just wanted to. Can I say something about a couple of points? Mirandi.
Oh yeah.
Just one thing about that was I heard him say that, you know, like he used those bits of things in the bottles.
Mm.
But he said if he'd have kept all the old bottles, he'd have had a room full. So he just kept certain bottles, and then he threw all the other ones away. Did you know that? And then I got another story too. This is about words and images. This is the Russian futurists. This is a paranomastic moment in his philosophy. This is the Russian thing. Both the Stoics, and this is Lewis Carroll with his nonsense words, manipulate the boundaries between word and thing and render language a metaphysical surface. And then say a little bit more. The common conceptual property is therefore a dynamic and spatio-temporal one. They are linked through a shared characterization of language as a slippery, multidimensional surface in which things are both virtual and actual, both words and bodies, both words and things. So, like, that's a way, metaphysically, that the word can sit with an image in a way that's, I find, interesting, you know, sort of acceptable, not sort of, you were talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I curated a show, well, my first show was called Sense and Nonsense, and it was like a translation from, I think, Brotas was talking about putting a word, the fact that you can't look at the same bit in your head, can't deal with an image and a word at exactly the same time. So you do this bouncing about, which I find is what I do. If I look at a word on a painting, you know, I'm going backwards and forwards like a nightmare, you know. But there's something fun in that, and it turns the whole thing into kind of nonsense, which I really like, because it's then you're not anywhere. And I'm so happy in art not to be anywhere, other than, like, I know I'm experiencing something, but I haven't a clue what it is, you know, and that bit really interests me, I think.
But you know, Rosarch, coming back to that, you know Robert Irwin, the Californian artist?
No,
anyhow, what he said was he did a Rosarch test.
Oh, yeah.
And the psychiatrist or psychologist said, what can you see in this? And he said, I can see a splash. He said, can't you see a horse or something? He said, no, I can see a splash. And he said, stop doing this to me. He said, look, my training is to see things for literally what they are.
God, it's depressing, isn't it?
Yeah, there we go. I thought that would bring us back. You know.
I'm chucking him out in a minute, right? Look, I'm better now. He's got me going again. You know?
Come back.
Okay. Are you both undergoing therapy? Or?
I've got through
first.
With mine.
You got through with yours?
Yeah, 30 years.
Yeah, I never answer those sort of questions.
Oh, right.
Well, you know, privacy, does that mean anything these days?
Well, Bob just lets it all out.
He obviously does. I haven't seen that. The viewers can't see what he looks like.
No, they will.
All right. But why this fixation with Belgium, Jerry?
I mean, to be honest, well, it was, you know, I've said it before, you know, I met that Belgium great artist Brotas when I was very young, and it was just a wonderful, maybe that's not the right word. I just knew from the moment I saw that show at the ICA that this was felt good, you know, and I went away sort of bouncing a bit, because if, you know, you're not part of the art world or whatever, you get your little bit of, you know, it's almost like a backdoor entry to it. And then all of a sudden, everyone's going off to the dinner or the pub or whatever, and you're going home. But there's something if you feel good and you feel wow, you know, then you pick up on all the rest of it. And so then I just, you know, followed his work from London, really. And then all of a sudden I realised there's going to be a big show in Belgium, and it was cancelled, but I went anyway. And then you get sort of, you know, soaked up in it, and then, I mean, it's just gone a bit viral, a bit too much in a way, because any artist that hits that circus level, then you can't get access to things that you would have access to when artists are not as, like, as important, you know, which I find a bit, it's kind of, I don't know, it feels like, I hate to say it, but it feels like it's over. If like a million people are doing PhDs on one artist, you think, what is it about? It is a, and I think Panamarenko said it to Brotas. They left a show in Antwerp, and Brotas just said, well, it's my destiny in a way, you know. And it just felt a bit...
On the mention of Panamarenko,
yeah,
I'm now showing Jerry a box I brought with me, because I'm going to try and sell it to him.
I know, well, actually...
I can try and sell this on air. This will be the first time...
Yeah, but I know...
It's like, what am I bid for this?
Well, I know the opening bid.
It's a Mönchengladbach box.
Yeah. A multiple.
And I'm going to hand it over to you now, and you can describe it on air.
Well, I know already the photo was by Maria Gillison.
Yeah, but the listeners don't know anything about it. So tell us what you've got.
Well, Panamarenko, there he is in his uniform, and it was his original... No, I mean, I don't know what his original name was, but it was Panamarenko Multimillionaire was his first outing as that. And then he dropped the multimillionaire bit. And then he had pictures of him, Izzy Fishman, a great collector in Antwerp, supporter of avant-garde art sort of thing. And so he'd always support the projects. And I think Annie De Decker set... Oh, there was a lot of stuff Panamarenko did, but she set up a gallery called Wide White Space. And it was really to help all that performance stuff and that, in a way, have a bit of protection because the police were after them a bit. And, you know, there was a lot of left-wing stuff attached to it as well. So... And then Maria Gillison is Brotas' widow, and she took this photo that's on the cover of Panamarenko in front of an aeroplane.
Uh-huh.
And his dad was a riveter, so he was in the docks, so he loves rivets, Panamarenko. So if you ever see his submarine, which is wonderful, it's just like rivet, 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 rivet. I mean, there is a bit in my show I just did that I've never done a rivet in my life, and I got given one of these, you know, a small rivet thing, and I just couldn't work out what it was or how to use it. And then the way little rivets work is so lovely. It just pushes it. It's quite sexual, actually. It pushes one thing through another thing. You see, wow, that's good. So, he's a great artist as well.
Okay, so he certainly doesn't have the reputation of Brotas, does he?
He's sort of quite sick of the... I mean, he said about... You know, when Benjamin Buchlow and all these people write about Brotas, it's like Panamarenko doesn't recognise the Brotas that he kind of was with and knew. And I mean, Panamarenko was a cyclist as well.
Okay.
There's a great picture of him in the Museum of Eagles Garden with his bicycle. He had a bicycle race, I think, to Brussels.
Uh-huh.
It's just a lovely... Well, you know, you're lucky somehow. He would be lucky. Brotas was lucky. They had a lovely bit of the world to make art in a way. And it was tiny. And it was... And then once, I think I remember when Brotas died, someone saying, oh, it's going to hit the fan now because everyone's going to go for interpretation.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's awful, you know. I don't know, I just...
So you basically, you veer away from things to become too popular. I mean, it's just...
No, I just think it's not that. It's just like all of a sudden you won't be able to get a ticket to something because the whole thing's full up or there's a private list on it. Do you know what I mean? It's gone... Mm. It's gone up towards like the museum and MoMA, you know.
So you prefer it to be secret or sort of isolationist?
No, just accessible. But in a way, like otherwise, it's like if only there were these little models that everyone could have, like join, rather than, you know, when it's like, in a way, you'd almost, well, you're lucky when an artist you like isn't big, big, big time, you know what I mean? Because then you can maybe meet the family, hear people that met him. Then you gather all, like, the stories. And there's nothing better than, you know, people telling you just little incidents and what he said or did. You know, I met him twice.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, you know, I can live off these little...
He died personal. Very young, didn't he? Was he in his 40s when he died?
He died on his birthday.
Oh, really?
He was older than 40, I think. His 50s or something.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
No, he died very young. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's what Barry Barker says. Shakespeare dies on his birthday. There's another character, Barry Barker, because in a way it's because of him. He did the show at the ICA. He did a lot of lovely shows in his was his flat in Museum Street, and a lot of people just say he doesn't get the recognition he deserves for actually putting some of these little bits and pieces together. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, for me, just jumping in there as I was a, you know, gardener at the time, and I thought, wow, what a... And I do think that's how... I don't think you should encourage, like, force people into art. People, you know, will find it now and again, and that's enough for me, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't... Because there's other worlds, there's a world of this, there's a world of that, playing the music, you know, and shoving it, you know, like, I do think the middle classes, they just force all this kind of world onto their children, and they, you know, the Suzuki method or whatever, you know, and it's a nightmare for the kids, because what's there left for them to discover in the world, or, you know, like art, music, all that, it's this horrible thing that their parents want you to blooming do, ballet, whatever, you know, and yet I think kids will discover things, you know, they're just... They get older, they think they're curious, and they discover it. And I don't know, I'm a bit sick of some of these sort of middle-class parents, to be honest with
you. Were you interested, you know, you're talking about Belgian art, Blood Thiers, is that?
Brotard.
Are you interested in the symbolists, Belgian symbolists at all?
I don't know as much about, they're earlier, aren't they?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, it was big. I mean, I do like... There's the Gelda Roda, the playwright, who lived in his living room for 20 years without coming out of it.
Oh, fantastic.
He wrote a couple of plays, one Dr. Faustus. And there's, you know, Arabor Wiesman, who wrote that Against Nature.
I'm not really... Against Nature?
That's him. He was Belgian.
Oh, is that Houseman?
Yeah. Wiesman.
See, this is...
Houseman.
You're going to pronounce Brotas wrong, I'm going to pronounce Wiesman. Yeah. We can have a game of tennis pronouncing it wrong.
Okay, absolutely, yeah.
Right, and William could be the judge, you know.
All right. Yeah. What about Ensor? Does he figure in this?
Oh, I love it. Ostend. Yeah.
But have you seen it? It's in the Getty in California,
America,
in L.A.,
yeah.
It's enormous. It's about 20 foot by 15 foot. Can you believe it?
And the great thing about Ostend, isn't it? The short... What is it now? The shortest street in Ostend, it's like a dead end, and it just is called the street that never ends.
Well, I was going round Europe with my friend when I left school, and we were 8 hours hitchhiking in Ostend without getting a lift. So I know the main road out of Ostend.
To interject, yeah. Bob is a big aficionado of R&B music. He went to Los Angeles in search of R&B.
Wow.
And interestingly, Marvin Gaye ended up in Ostend, didn't he?
He did for a while.
Did he?
Yeah, he made Sexual Healing outside Brussels. Did he? Didn't you know?
I didn't know that. Yeah. I don't like Marvin Gaye anyhow. So.
He killed
his dad, didn't
William
he?
William
his dad killed him.
There's a film of Marvin Gaye.
If you'd have told me he's going to be on, I'd never have come.
Okay, settle down. To play some music, otherwise. Yeah. He doesn't like Marvin Gaye. Okay, but there is a connection with Marvin. Come on. Calm down.
Oh, no. All right, is that all depression? What do you want?
Depression.
Now then. All right, so anyway, so your Jerry Smith floral paintings or flower paintings?
And the objects and,
The Danielle Arnault Gallery.
Yep.
Which is where?
123 Kennington Road. It's in that, just after the War Museum.
It looks like a house, doesn't it? You wouldn't know it was a gallery from the outside.
No, it does say Empire House outside. So.
Does it?
Yeah, that's quite nice. The Empire.
Right. Now, you've both brought records along, so we're going to have to compete here for what's in the Panamarenko box, first of all?
Well, I know already, don't I?
Well, you know, but Bob doesn't know.
I don't know. No,
let's open the box.
Okay, look at that, eh?
Whoa!
You're not allowed to touch because you ain't bought it.
No?
No.
Show it to Bob. Tell us what's inside it.
It looks like thread.
I can call it string, at least.
String. No, it's not string. It's too...
it's not a string?
It's too fibrous to be string.
Really?
I think.
Can I touch it?
You can touch it, yeah.
Well, I'd call that string.
Is it?
So you must probably got like a 20 words for snow, like the Swedish have. Well, I just say that's string, you know what I mean? What are you going to call it?
Well, I wouldn't call it a name.
Oh, dear.
Not into words.
So that's all there is in the box?
Yeah, well, it's a lot of money for what it is.
Indeed.
That's all I can say.
Yeah.
But you got a mug sitting in the chair here, so why not?
Absolutely.
That's really nice. I think it's really lovely. I like the rusty staples.
Yeah.
You know, there's a great, actually, Belgium artist who painted in... up from Ostend, and he made a contraption, and he used to do paintings looking at the sea, but they were all of like villages and windmills, and his wife was down below selling these raffle tickets, you know, and then he'd go off and have a fag in the bar, come back, and then whoever sort of won the raffle would get the painting.
Yeah.
And this chap, Tony Hayward in London, he started collecting them. He realised he's painting more pictures than Picasso.
Yeah.
And in the winter, he'd be down in Charleroi doing them in the station.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, he's a good artist, which is nice. I gave, I think, one to Tony because he's a collector, but then this other artist knew I was like it, so he found one for me.
Yeah.
So now I feel, well, he's given it to me, I've got to keep it. Yeah. And it's a lovely painting. It's done really quick. I even took one to an artist who also saw him in...
What's the name of the artist?
Yeah.
Now, the name is Emilio.
Emilio, okay.
He just signs it Emilio, and then apparently you can tell they're his because he put the little crappy bit of wood, but he put the canvas on with drawing pins. Rusty old drawing pins. So when you go around the market, but I found one I thought was Emilio, but the signature wasn't that, and I took it to Walt and he just said no straight away.
Uh-huh.
And then it's true, it's like the speed he did them. Right. It's a bit like the Van Gogh drawings, really. You can only do those quickly.
Right.
You know, they say like the best and the worst drawings are done quickly. And it's just like whack, 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 whack. And what this guy is, he does it. You know, it's like images and... Yeah. And
but the curious thing was he would go to the... It was in Ostend.
It wasn't Ostend. It was... Where is it now? Near Ostend.
Ostend.
Maybe it was Ostend, actually. There was a casino. It might have been Ostend, actually.
So he'd set up his easel on the waterfront.
But it wasn't an easel, really. It was a whole, like, a ladder going up to, like, a display thing.
Yeah.
And you could see him up there, like, 6 foot up, painting these paintings. So, you know, it'd always have... There's postcards, old postcards you'll find in markets of Ostend. I think it is Ostend at the time. And there he is up there painting with a crowd round, and his wife's selling his raffle tickets.
But he's not painting the view, is he?
No, he is, but one day of the year, when it was the Day of the Sailors, did he paint the sea. But he's like looking out the sea, but he's painting like in, you know, windmills, little rivers, cottages. But they are good.
Okay.
You know, which is nice, really.
Right. All right. Well... Bob has had a film made about him, which was shown recently at the Sheffield
Documentary Festival.
Documentary Film Festival.
Oh, it's gone, isn't it?
And that's
it.
How did it go, Bob?
Yeah, it's good. It was fun.
Yeah.
You know the the Act of Killing, but the subsequent one that. The Look of Silence, I think it's called.
Oh,
it's just out right now.
Yeah.
She edited that film, but she edited my film as well.
Oh, right.
And what I like about my film, and having seen that one, it's got something that like lifts it up. It's not something you could tie down in the film.
Right.
It's not what it's about, but it's what we're both interested in as a hum artist, because I don't use that word anymore. But
what's the hum bit?
I don't believe in the word. I believe I'm a human being, not a hum artist.
Well, speak for yourself.
Yeah, I am. Anyhow.
You don't look like one.
Don't look like a human being.
No.
Wonderful.
I'll be honest.
That's very
great.
Personal.
I love it.
What's very that? Personal.
What, who?
You.
I'm just trying to... What can you get away with today?
Oh, I see. Oh, you know,
you can't get away with anything. Anyhow.
So you want to be provocative?
No, not at all. No.
You are. You're picking a fight with him.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I need this pointed out because I'm having trouble lately. Everywhere.
Exactly.
It's not just in
here. Yeah. On air, I'm telling you. You said he doesn't look human.
You've got a whole audience there that will corroborate William's story.
Exactly.
It's really... I know. I do protect myself. Someone said it's really hard to get sectioned. So I think you know.
You're working on it.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
Do you want to be sectioned?
Not particularly.
No.
but you know what? This idea of what is inappropriate, it's like we're living in Victorian England, for God's sake. You know, you just say a couple of words.
Yeah, but Bob's just, he's got long hair, that's all. Yeah.
Is it?
He's got long hair. He's got long white hair.
Now you're interpreting why I said he wasn't human.
So all right,
it could have been a joke.
But what would you say? Why would you say
it?
It's a joke.
It's a joke. I'm a joke now.
No,
not only am I not human, but I'm a joke.
It's words. Yeah, it's just words.
Yeah.
Words.
Not just words.
No, that's true. Okay, yeah.
Words are very powerful and can be quite wounding.
Now, do people in this room accept apologies?
No.
See what I mean? See, he jumps into my show and he's giving a look. You know what I mean? Okay. Have you heard him apologise for turning up a week early?
Oh, he's apologised to me. For, that's between me and him.
After the radio night, I'm apologising for turning up a week early.
We're fine with that. We're fine with that.
Okay.
Okay. So Bob is he does performance. He's quite outrageous performances, and that's the way he works out his whatever it is.
Inner demon.
Exactly.
I want you to play. Could you play? Oh, this is like I'm getting in nervous. It's all right. If number 12, it's a CD. Don't worry about playing anything else. This to me, I only heard it actually on Sounds of the 60s. Right. It's the best rhythm and blues record of all time. It's my new favourite. Oh, okay. It's got everything.
Right.
12.
Okay. Oh yes, I got
Jackie Wilson.
Right.
Watch out.
Watch out, baby. Look out, little mama. I got my eyes on you. The way you giggle when you talk, baby. Wiggle when you walk, baby. I got my eyes on you. Don't you move a woman. Stand still.
Yeah.
Where did you come from? Where have you been? What is your name? Can I be your friend? I like your style. Honey, I dig your smile. Watching you a long, long while.
Oh, baby. Yeah. Can't you cough over if I start to swear?
Yeah, no, you can't swear.
No, swearing.
That's what I know, but accidentally, I'd rather but no one heard it.
Jerry's already calling for security.
I'll lock the door.
Watch out, baby. Look out, mama. I got my eyes on you. Watch out, little baby. Look out, little mama, yeah. Don't you move, baby. And I got my eyes on you, yeah, baby.
Okay. What's the verdict then?
Well, you're not getting... I mean, he don't like Marvin Gaye. Why should I praise this thing?
You don't have to.
Do you know what I mean?
Say what you like. It's a free world. Go on.
Is it not for you?
Well, no, to be honest, I was so upset at his comments about Marvin. I'm in shock.
Okay.
So I just couldn't hear anything other than, like, you know...
All right.
I'm still in shock.
Well, tell me about your records, because you've got this strange... Jerry, you've got a strange collection of records that you brought in.
Well, it's something I. Oh, you know when I was doing putting the flower things together, you sort of go hang around shops, and I know you do, William, because I phoned you up one the other day, and you told me to get on with it. Is what you said.
I was in a shop dealing with somebody. That's why.
Oh, I see. But get on with it. It's so impolite, you know.
I didn't say...
You
I
said
know,
get
I,
on with
no,
it.
No, I didn't. I said... I can't remember what I said. I think it was like be quick or something.
No, it was get on with it. I know.
I've known you long enough to be able to say get on with it.
I just thought I wanted to get that in the programme. To get the relationship. But anyway, these records, it was just like, oh, God, I saw them there. No, I made a mistake. I thought it was American progressive music, and it wasn't. It was American mechanical music. But but one of the tracks I thought was really... You know, it was like... I think it's God Save the Queen, but on these mechanical things, yeah. It just, when you sometimes listen to something that's made a long time ago, it just sounds so funny, you know. So this is it, really. It's kind of, I think it's God Save the Queen.
Right.
But it's
well,
funny.
Shall we give it a whirl?
Yeah.
Let's try and get this going. Now standing up.
Quite right, too. I don't subject myself to that authority.
Right. Oh, it goes at Yankee Doodle Dandy now.
It's sort of patriotic stuff, really.
I see. It's a medley.
I think so, yeah. I thought it sounded happy birthday then, anyway. Well, I think why I wanted to play it was I remember as a kid going to the cinema and there's that bit at the end where people just rush out before the national anthem comes. And
yeah.
And I thought, well, if they switched it to the beginning now, then like if you want to avoid the adverts, you kind of avoid it. So I was hoping to put it at the beginning of the
program. Strangely enough, I was in the Embankment Gardens the other day
with
two friends, which is where you used to work.
Indeed, yes.
In the Embankment Gardens behind the Savoy Hotel.
Yeah.
And there's a bandstand there, isn't there?
There is, yeah.
And they were setting up. And so we thought we'd wait and see what they started to play.
Nice.
And we thought, well, this might be quite pleasant. You know, it's like a sunny afternoon.
Yeah.
And there's a big crowd of people. They're all sitting in deck chairs. And, of course, they started with God Save the Queen.
It's like we're military bands, most of them.
So we just walked away immediately.
Yeah. Well, it's all that stuff, I'm afraid.
You know? Have you ever been to Wookiee Hole?
No, where's that?
Cheddar Gorge, close to there.
No.
Well, this is up 20 years ago. They had the Museum of Fairgrounds there.
Oh, lovely.
And it just evokes that feeling of like a hurdy-gurdy, all that fun of the fair. And it's not any good after. It worked for about a year, and then it got commercialised, and then it lost the feeling. But at that time, it was true.
But for me, it's more like the... You know, when you hear it, and like you hear it now, it's like someone's making it as a humorous sort of joke.
Hmm.
If you know, I can't see how anyone back then would have ever taken that seriously. And
no,
there's a whole.
I first came to London, I went to the when I went to the film school. The Hampstead Everyman Cinema. I went there to see Metropolis by Fritz Lang, and they played God Save the Queen in the cinema before the film.
Yeah.
And it's not so long ago, you know.
No.
I mean, we're not talking about sort of, you know, and most of the audience did actually stand up.
Yeah.
And we felt there were three of us and we all remained seated.
That's right.
It seemed extraordinary because, I mean, even coming from Leicester, you wouldn't get that in a cinema in Leicester.
But
would you?
I think it's coming out of depression also. I did a thing called Access to Parliament with my charity work, the place I was working. And I went there and it was basically... You know, you're showed how Parliament works and blah, blah, blah. But from the moment I went in with the presentation, it was like I was Winston Smith at the start of 1984.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought, but this is like, it must all be, you know, it's someone's telling me all this stuff, but everyone knows it's not true, if you know what I mean. It felt the PR was so unbelievably, you know, over the top, you know, but it's like, I mean, I won't call it misinformation, but, you know, pretty bloody close.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Oswald. But,
no,
you know,
it's
you
all
just
right,
think,
right.
Just, this is like, what's going on here? You know, like you feel like, you know, like hearing that music in a way, just like the comedy of it all. And And I suppose I was at an Ian Hamilton Finley show the other day, and I got a bit scared because there is, like, it's all about the French Revolution, and we haven't had one. So you just think, you know, the politics at the moment, things are getting nasty and nasty. And then you just feel like, what is going to happen? Like, violence or what? And then that's horrible, you know. Like, and then my brain goes, oh, well, then I was chatting to Danielle's assistant, Rosanna's telling me about, you know, if you get onto, say, the national holiday for France, and then, okay, it was Bastille Day, but she said that they considered that too violent. So then she said 2 years later, she said it was the end of Privilege Day. Well, see, I misheard her, I think, because I thought, what a wonderful name for a national day, the end of Privilege Day. So then I thought, well, I better go back and check this, but because I start telling everybody. And then I went back, but then I think what it was it's 2 years later on Bastille Day, they passed a law to end privilege, you see. But I thought, God, instead of all these silly names for days, what about the end of Privilege Day? You know, wouldn't it be wonderful if we're going somewhere at last, you know? But I suppose we're not. Where are we going? Where are we going?
When you said about comedy, and then you think about the national anthem, I remember I was acutely embarrassed every time as a kid I used to have to stand up. I didn't have the guts really to sit down. But I think it was I had a comedic angle on the national anthem. You know, and I like to... I had a mate at school, Clive Corner, who had this really dirty laugh. And he specialised when at speech day at school, when the vicar was telling this corny joke, out from the back, Clive would go, ha ha ha! And Mrs. Hoover would put her hand over it and trying to muffle there. So humour didn't play a large part in the 60s or the 50s.
It can be like acid, can't it? If you chuck good humour at something, you can see it for what it is. You know, like sometimes good humour can sort of reveal what the situation is more than anything else.
Well, Arthur Koestler in The Act of Creation defined the creative act as the act of humour.
It's like... But that's why we... I mean, I love the sort of... I used to read about the Spanish sort of anarchists and the Civil War. And
syndicalists.
I love the way that... Yeah, the syndicalists. But I love the way the anarchists, they sort of, look, we want it now. We want a bit of pleasure. We want this. And there was the communists, a bit boring, you know. Like, I mean, who wants to fight for them, for God's sake? You know, and the anarchists are saying, look, you know.
All the fun.
Well, yeah, do that. And also, we know what we're doing, you know, blah, blah, blah.
We know what we're doing. We don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we know we might be wrong, you know. We might be wrong, you know. But anyway, let's have a laugh.
There's a big demonstration tomorrow, isn't there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is there,
Do neither of you know about this?
No.
Oh, yeah. Big demonstration in London. Yeah. It's called the People's March Against Austerity. And it starts at the Bank of England.
Yeah.
And it's going to march to Downing Street.
Yeah.
And they figure there's going to be thousands of people, but who knows? Anyway, so there you go.
Yeah. We could do the People's March Against Integrity. You know, like
I think we'll use.
Well, I think they're already marching over London Bridge every morning. Oh, okay, I think, on their way to the city.
It's sad, isn't it? It's like, what do you do? You know, you just think, oh God. Yeah. Well, I do hope. You know, I hope unions have a massive revival because that's the way I see it. You know,
I sit behind four, five, six union guys on the train coming up from South. They're like real.
Yeah.
It was fresh to hear them talking.
Yeah. That's it. Sort of. Well, because it's
normal.
Like, that bit about history, I don't know what you call it, it's Russian, but it's the idea that you're going forward, but in order to go forward, it looks like you're going back on yourself. But
take the speed of the slowest battleship, that's the...
Oh, is that what this is more like a cyclic, so like, imagine you've got a straight line, then it looks like you're turning on back yourself, but you need to do that circle to go forward again.
Absolutely.
And the Russians have got a name for it, and it's wonderful, because maybe that is what it is now. We are going forward, but things are just not good, and we've just got to hang in there and do it, whatever, you know.
You're an optimist, after all.
I think so.
Russians.
Yeah, no, I'm sure of that.
You're not that depressed, are you?
No. Oh, God, no, why should I be? You know, like,
well, the Russians love to suffer. That's their main thing, isn't it? So what about you? How do you stand in relation to depression and suffering?
Or suffering? Yeah. Oh, I'm not sure of that. No, is there any pleasure in it?
Yeah.
I don't think
it's called masochism.
Familiar, right? Yeah. Maybe if you do it with someone else, there might be, but not on your own.
Sadism.
Yeah.
So you like masochism.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah. No, I've never done that one. I won't say you look like you have, but.
You could say it.
Okay. I've got.
Oh, I love it.
Running out of time,
aren't we?
Yeah,
yeah.
No, we're all right.
Okay.
All right.
So you've asked me to play something else now.
Yeah, well, it's not... Is it number...
Which seems to be number 9.
That's it.
I was reticent to play it, but I will...
Oh,
I will do it.
Yeah, just
want.
I think... Well,
oh, this is Sinead.
Yeah, do you like her?
Never seen her.
Oh, that's the wrong...
No, it definitely
is. That doesn't sound like her.
No.
Okay.
It's definitely a CD.
That this sounds more like it. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, I'll shut up now and listen.
All right.
Promise.
Margaret Thatcher on TV, shocked by the deaths that took place in Beijing. It seems strange that she should be offended. The same orders are given by her. I've said this before now. You said I was childish and you'll say it now. Remember what I told you. If they hated me, they will hate you. England's not the mythical land of Madame George and her roses. It's the home of police who kill black boys on mopeds. And I love my boy, and that's why I'm leaving. I don't want him to be aware that there's any such thing as grief. Young mother down at Smithfield, 5 a.m. looking for food for her kids. In her arms she holds 3 cold babies, and the first word that they learned was please. Days. To say what you feel is today your own grave. Remember what I told you. If you were of the world, they would love you. England's not the mythical land of Madame George and roses. It's the home of police who kill black boys on mopeds. And I love my boy, and that's why I'm leaving. I don't want him to be aware that there's any such thing as grief. Ooh.
So that's Jerry Smith's choice. Was it Sinead O'Connor?
Yeah, it's just, I think it's, for me, it feels real. You know, someone says about what's, you know, I mean, in doing the show, I was trying to, I just see a lot of mopeds smashed up and, I mean, I don't know, you know, there's kids riding around trying to get a bit of money, delivering pizzas, and they're getting, you know, they're getting sod all money for it, and they're rushing about. I don't know, it's just a mad world where, you know, and then, yeah. So I just think what she says, you know, about what England is, why she's leaving, I just think it's interesting, and I think she's, she's good.
She died 3 days after my mum died, Margaret Thatcher. Would you have been in Trafalgar Square celebrating her death? I would have, having a good laugh.
I felt, well, to be honest, you know, I mean, this may sound bad, but I felt, I mean, when I was at the Garden Museum doing the mural, I think if Margaret Thatcher ever went in the park, people would shout at her. So the Lambeth Palace let her walk around there, you know, because she obviously, she, her memory wasn't what it was. I just think she was used, you know, and she's used, chucked out, you know, get another one. I'm not really angry with her because I just think if her death meant it was over, of course it's not over. Do you know what I mean? What does that mean, her death? But anyway, but, you know, she was just, I mean, a lot of that, they get someone else in the front line, they take the hits, you know. And then they go, you know, a bit lula because they feel everyone said, you know, they're disloyal to them at a certain point. They're just frontline troops, aren't they, basically? That's the way I see it.
Well, I think you're both descending into depression here.
It's going very quick.
Play my next track. Play my number three. This is it. I'll get another one in before it goes.
I don't know. But
tell us a bit about this. What's this track, Bob? Come on. Get us out of this
hole. This is the R&B label records. They just come out, man, and it's Creole Walk. I don't know who they are. Phil Gilbert and his Creole Stompers. It was 1962, the Soho scene, and this sort of predated all the Klutz Clique reinvention of itself. So it was just on
the. It looks interesting. What's it called? Jazz Goes Mod, Soho Scene 62.
I think this is the one.
So who is this one on this track?
They're all instrumentals. Yeah. This is Phil Gilbert and his Creole Stompers. Oh, no, it's not the one I thought it is, but anyhow, play it.
I can change it if you want.
All right, go over to side one and play two, because I love this Hammond organ. I can't seem to find the ones I want.
Well, that sounds good, a Hammond organ.
Lou Donaldson. Number two. Funky Mama, part one.
Keep talking whilst
I'm right. Okay, but this is, I just love this, it's the R&B feeling that, like, it's understated. Here you go. Thank you.
Park's choice. What was that? Funky Mama by Lou Donaldson on Blue Note, May 1962.
Uh-huh.
Do you like that, Jerry?
Great.
Yeah? Oh. All right. Well, we are reaching the end of the programme. You've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM with Bob Parks as interloper, who will be on next week to continue his lecture on God knows what, Malevich or who?
The unexplored side of totalitarianism.
Right.
From Gustav Moreau to Kazimir Malevich.
Excellent. And Jerry Smith's exhibition continues at the flower paintings at the Danielle Arnault Gallery on Kennington Road. And do you want to tell us about this sound evening, Jerry? Perhaps you could
It's an afternoon, yeah. Like, you know, in the French they call it a finissage on the last day of the show at 4 o'clock. Even I like doing something that's nothing to do with me, so I invited a few people to do some. And the title is called, I love title, but this one's called Before Death There Are Strange Sounds from Sunday Flowers. So anyway, that's the title of the afternoon.
And when is that?
It is on the 12th of July at 4 o'clock.
At the Danielle Arnault Gallery?
Yeah, in the garden, yeah.
Okay, so they will be sound works, yeah?
Yeah.
Right.
No pictures, just sounds.
Right, okay. And are you doing a sound piece?
Well, I wasn't going to, but someone pulled out. So,
oh, right.
But I might pull someone else in if I can find someone.
Now, yeah. Stick to it. Like, I pulled in on your show, so you pull in on that one in the same screen.
Yeah,
well, you could butt in next week, Jerry. You can come on and interfere with
Mess me up.
No,
I'm sure
he sounds like he knows his stuff, and then
both know your stuff. I think you're from different fields. I think you bounced off each other quite well.
I mean, I did meet someone quite up in the art world, and he just said he's working on the lines that artists don't belong. And I think, I think maybe we don't want to belong either.
No, absolutely not. You kidding?
So I think that's it, really, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah.
Put two of us together and it's fucking, what do we belong to? No!
Yeah. Oh,
we've got to bleep that out.
We didn't hear that.
No, we didn't hear it.
Oh, did I say anything?
You did, but
nothing.
Very quietly.
Weren't you aware of it?
Nobody heard. Nobody heard.
It's
under your breath.
Yeah, you can get sectioned for that.
It's adjectives. I don't use adjectives. I just use those horrible words.
All right. So how are we going to round this up? We've still got this. We've still got the barrel.
Sing
organ.
The song. What's your favourite tune?
We've still got this barrel organ. Is it barrel organ? Mechanical organ?
Yeah, you could put a bit of that on. Just that's cheerful. Thank you. Where have you got to get back to then?
New Forest.
Where is that?
100 miles south, in between Bournemouth and Southampton.
New Forest.
Come down any time.
Is that where,
Charles II was discovered on the Isle of Wight, but it's where they had... It's old. Forest of Dean, that's in Wales. That way, that side of England-ish. No, it's older than the Forest of Dean, actually, New Forest. Forest, but it's not that.
And then, do you like it out in London? Have you been in?
Well, I was in Southall for all my life, but it sounds nice to have both.
I think that's South Wales.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Oh dear. I feel exhausted, aren't I?
Oh, yeah.
It's tiring, isn't it, Ray? Don't you think it's not tiring?
No.
Very tiring. I hope they've got a good place, my boy. You're going to speak now?
No.
I'm saying,
I've said it all.
So what, it goes automatic now, does it?
Yeah. We're finished now.
Fuck off. No. I thought you said no arms.
I'll have to get him to fade that out.
Oh no, I thought you said we're finished.
I know. Still got the sound up.
It's all right.
That's all right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Best part
of it.
But he didn't realise.
Realise what? He kept the mic on.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really good. The best bit of the programme. You know, like, when you say quick drawing, it's the same thing.
Oh,
you're
I
not
see.
Looking at it. Either it's rubbish or it's great.
Yeah, it's just one or the other.